Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jill.
Can everybody understand me through the mask? Okay. Hi, I'm Jill, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Jill.
And hi, everyone. I'm so glad to be here tonight and see such a big turnout. First of all, I want to welcome anybody who's relatively new or is too afraid to talk. I could barely raise my hand when I was new, and they didn't even really ask newcomers to, you know, talk or anything like that. We were just kind of told to shut up and don't talk for 30 days and listen. You know, that was, you know, I came in May 19th, 1976. And so I had a 5-year abstinence, which I went out after 5 years when I was back east in graduate school. And then I came back and I never left. I got my abstinence back in September 1st, 1980. So I've been abstaining since September 1st, 1980. I'm maintaining about a 50, now it's a little bit more since I've been sick, but 50-pound weight loss. So I'm very grateful. I am eternally grateful. And I just want to wish the happy birthday person. I think he said it all. What got me back after going out, and I can tell you this disease is progressive when you go back out. I gained 40 pounds in 6 weeks stealing money. I didn't have any money. Stealing money. I was in a nursing dorm stealing money and, you know, buying and stealing food and doing things. I really had never stole food before. You know, that wasn't part of my disease before my first abstinence. But, you know, I was desperate. I needed to get my food. And so it is progressive, 40 pounds in 6 weeks. And it was pretty brutal. So then and it had to do with the kindness of this one woman. I was in St. Louis at the time. And it had to do with the kindness of this one woman who just asked me. She just said to me, "You seem very sad." And I said, "I am," you know. It brings tears to my eyes now. And she just said, "You know, you can start abstaining, you know." And I said, I know. And for whatever reason, I mean, I couldn't stop. And then the miracle hit, and then I could stop. Then I started abstaining. And I can't tell you why. I didn't do anything any differently. But for some reason, just her caring about me, just people caring about me, I think that's why I just keep coming back so much to Overeaters Anonymous. I know we deeply care about one another. We may not like each other that much, but we deeply care about what a person doing well. I wouldn't wish this disease on my worst enemy. I really wouldn't. And I'm so grateful I had the gift of desperation when I first came into OA in 1976. And I heard at my first meeting was at Douglas Park. I had dropped out of college. I couldn't function. I was a non-functional compulsive overeater. When I was eating, I couldn't study. A lot of people eat, you know, study and needed food to study. Well, that wasn't my case. If I was eating, I was not studying. I was checked out. And so, you know, I was dating this guy at the time, and he left for the quarter to see a person he ended up marrying, actually, that he was just dating. You know, we were 19 years old, and it just devastated me. He was the first guy I think I really cared about, and I just couldn't deal with it. I just started eating. I couldn't stop, and I couldn't function in school, so I dropped out of school. And my mom suggested I try OA. Both my parents were in AA, and my brother was in NA at the time, so I went to my first meeting at Douglas Park, and I heard, you know, that I had a disease and that it wasn't my fault. And it was such a relief for me to realize I had a disease and it wasn't It wasn't a moral issue anymore. I was a sick person, and I needed to get well. And as I look back, I was a very sick person. I didn't see myself as being so sick back then, but through the years, I realized I came into these rooms pretty ill, pretty emotionally, spiritually bankrupt, and very ill, and I needed a lot of help. And, you know, I was just lucky. It was just, I went to a meeting, I went to a lot of meetings, and I got a sponsor fairly quickly. I went to a meeting at somebody's house, and it was a very intimate meeting. It was very important to me, and I went to a meeting and met my sponsor there, and she had a lot of time, and she spent a lot of time with me. We talked an hour or an hour and a half on the phone, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. I mean, it was, and she took me through the steps the first time. And I, you know, I think for me, the steps were the key for my recovery in this program. You know, when I was focusing on the steps, I really had a lot of freedom from food. When I got away from focusing on the steps or working a step or whatever, that's when, you know, my restless irritability and discontent kind of takes over. You know, I'm kind of a restless person. I'm a highly anxious person. I'm much less anxious than I used to be. But I was a highly anxious person. I was a highly anxious kid. I did a lot of things to kind of soothe me, you know, rock, you know, like singing in my bedroom, you know, pushing, you know, singing, self-entertaining, you know, and I sucked my thumb, and I did a lot of self-soothing things in order to, you know, to calm myself. And then, of course, there was food, and I started eating very young, but it's not till my dad lost his job when I was about 8 that I got bigger, and I was very athletic, so nobody really teased me because I would beat them up, you know. So I didn't really, nobody hassled me, you know. But I wasn't obese, but I was just a big girl. Like, I think today I would be average, but back then when everybody was skinny, I was not skinny. I was definitely overweight, and I had a lot of shame about it. And my dad was a compulsive overeater as well, and he had a lot of shame, and I just took on that shame, I think, around overeating. But thank God my mom never shamed. That was one thing she never did. You know, she did her due diligence, but shaming me around my food was not one of them. So I'm very grateful for that. But so I started working the steps, and I had a community. We, you know, I had friends, and, you know, in OA, and I called them, and I was just very connected with the program. And I you know, I had my sponsor, and then I had my friends, and we were all in college, and, you know, we're all going through the same thing. And it was really, the fellowship was really important to me at that time. I went to a lot of meetings, made a lot of phone calls, was writing a lot at that time, working the steps. And, you know, I've done the steps a couple of different ways. Mainly the way that I have found to be the most effective for me is through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what's worked best for me. It was the most concrete, more the most direction oriented for me, and it just gave me, and it was very specific, you know. It had clear, I need structure, I need external structure in which to function, else I'm out there, you know. I'm not like my partner now, my wife now, she's totally self-motivated. She doesn't need a bit of self-structure. She can sit down, and she could work from home and be very disciplined. Or if I was ever working from home, nothing would get done, you know. So, and thank God I had a job that I had to show up to. But, you know, so I like that. And a lot of people, I found for myself, really the last time I worked the steps and really thoroughly all the way through, probably maybe I've done parts and parcels, but maybe 10 years ago that I really went from start to finish kind of thing, I found that, you know, I had no fear this time when I did this. It might have been where I was, but if each step I did just moved me to the next step. Step one led me to step two, led me to step three, led me to the inventory, led me, you know, to giving it away, to the, you know, listing my character vtex, to having them removed, to doing my amends. I didn't have to worry about it because it was just kind of the next indicated action on my list of things to do. And it just moved me that way. Then there was no fear because I had done all the base work to remove all that fear, you know. So I didn't need to worry about it. I just didn't worry about it. I just, my sponsor at the time told me, just do the work. And I just focused on the work and didn't worry about, I just released the worry. I released the worry. And would say the set-aside prayer every morning, to set aside, so I'd have an open mind and a new experience. So about how I would do something. Because I had, you know, growing up in an alcohol home, you develop a lot of rigid ideas about how things should be or shouldn't be. And so you have this, so you close your mind. I closed my mind to a lot of things. So I was very rigid in my thinking, and it kept me safe, but it didn't work. You know, it wasn't operative for me. You know, the food has never been easy for me. Until the last maybe 5-8 years. I mean, food has never just been lifted and now it's gone. You know, I just don't, my abstinence, I don't eat anything that, you know, looks like a dessert. You know, I don't read labels about sugar. I don't worry about certain things, but things that are desserts, I don't eat. I haven't had a piece of cake, a piece of pie, you know, a cookie or anything in 43 years plus. So I don't do that. I don't eat candy. I don't, you know, I just, those are the things, you know, the things that led me, but I eat energy bars, you know, which are loaded with sugar and stuff like that. And I just, because I'm still very active and I need to eat something when I'm working out and doing things. So, but that's what I found with the steps and what, and all the promises came true for me. I mean, the last time I worked the steps, my relationship was kind of in a mess. And I knew if I didn't work the steps, but I made a commitment to work the steps before I left the relationship because I realized, you know, the common denominator was me. About every 7 years or so, because I didn't know how to take care of myself or do certain things, I would leave a relationship. So I knew if I didn't, I needed to work on myself first and then I'd make the decision to leave. And lo and behold, what happened is we worked everything out. I began, I changed some behaviors. She changed some behaviors. And, you know, we got married a couple of years. We just got married a couple of years ago, but we've been together 32 years. So, and we're really fortunate. I'm very lucky because we really complement each other. We have very, very few areas, bones of a contention. I'm really grateful for God to have somebody like her because I really have a pretty easy life with her, so to speak. So, but I want to talk about a little bit how the programs work for me most recently in, you know, I've been pretty much healthy all my life. You know, I've worked out. I never really got into alcohol or I really never had. I mean, I did for a short period of time. And my partner said to me, it's either me or the booze very quickly. And, you know, fortunately, I had a choice then, and it was definitely her. You know, I wasn't going to compromise that. That's something I wouldn't compromise. But, you know, otherwise, I've been relatively healthy. But before I was training for a marathon a year ago, December, and I did the marathon and did quite well. And but I had gone to the doctor because I was choking on something. And so my partner This is where people pleasing comes in handy. You know, she was nagging me to go to the doctor. So, okay, I'll chew more so then I won't, you know, then I can swallow better. But, you know, and I said, I don't think I need to go have this endoscopy, you know. She said, no, you need to go have this endoscopy. So I went, and what they did is they found a tumor in my esophagus. And so that, which meant, but it was, what, through a lot of tests, it was localized. So basically, I had to deal with, you know, chemo. What I'm grateful for, it was very simple. The treatment was very simple. Chemo, radiation, and then they cut out your esophagus, and a brutal surgery. So my insides are not the same anymore. They are pretty much gone. My stomach's been pulled up, so I have a little stomach now. So I just eat small meals, or actually sometimes I can eat more. I'd say I can eat like a person who doesn't exercise. That's what I say. I can eat like a person who doesn't exercise. I no longer can have my big salads, which I was a quantity eater. I eat huge volumes. I no longer can have my big salads. But it's okay, because I had already, like, the food had already been surrendered at that point. I had already, the last couple years, I had really been free from food, and for whatever reason. And so, you know, And I took each step. The thing is, I never worried. I just trusted. It's like God has put doctors there. You know, I was aware. I had, you know, but put doctors there to treat me. Okay, they're going to treat me. So show up, do what they say to do, and I did that. So they said, well, you may have this or that, and I read a book. Said you should exercise, even if you're nauseous, you should do certain things. I followed what the book said. So I was able to exercise, pretty much eat with modification. The radiation burns you pretty good, but a lot of people have such bad pain that they have to take liquid morphine in order to eat. I didn't have to do that. I just stayed in the moment, and it, you know, I was going to in-person meetings, but sometimes not. I was exercising, maybe not at the same level. God just led me through. I really can say, this is kind of the big thing. I sometimes bigger things, you know, I get a flat tire, that upsets me more than my cancer sometimes. But, you know, because it's such a hassle, you know, like I don't want to be hassled, you know. It's like, and I just want this to be done. But so I just did that. And then the surgery was pretty brutal, because it was a 10-hour surgery, and I was in the hospital 11 days, and I couldn't eat or drink for 3.5 weeks. So I had a tube in my stomach, and it made me nauseous, and I had a chest tube. It was really tough, and they don't let you sleep much in the hospital. And finally, I was about at the end of my rope, and somebody said to me, the pastor came in, and she said to me, you know, I just say I can't connect with God, because for the first time I couldn't connect. I was so exhausted, and because they'd wake me up at 4:30 to do blood and 7 to do an x-ray every single morning, and then the nurse would come in at 10 to introduce herself just as I got into sleep. And, you know, I don't know, if just have pity on anybody who's in a hospital. It just gives you a whole new perspective. And I said, I just can't connect. And she talked to me, and she said, you know, God never leaves you. You may not connect with him, but God never leaves you. And by her saying that, I just was able to just reconnect. Like, okay, you know, Judy brought my books in. Like, I felt I had the energy to reconnect, read a little bit of my prayer books. And then, you know, they let me sleep. They did a sleep thing where nobody could come in between 11 and 5. And so I got some rest. And everything, you know, God had taken care of me through the whole process. And, you know, I'm only 9 months out of surgery, and I'm going to meetings. I wear a mask just for protection, but I, I go to meetings. I cook. I do everything I'm supposed to do. I ride my bike. I ride my bike about 150 miles to 200 miles a week. I'm hiking. I'm doing just what I used to do before. Not at the same level, but just as I did before. And I really enjoy it. I'm retired. I don't have to, there's no place I have to be except where I want to be. And it's really nice that way. But, it's very nice to connect. And I am going to do, this program teaches us to be of service, to talk to people. And I saw my doctors recently, and a lot of people chicken out of this surgery. I know a couple people that, friends of friends, that have been on the operating table and just told them no, they didn't go in and have the surgery. Because it's pretty radical. You're in there for 10 hours. They rewire all your your stomach and everything. But I'm going to talk with people. I'm going to do some work. UCLA has I'll do some service, just like do service in OA. It teaches us to talk to people and be of service and help others and talk to people and give support and empathy. That's all people really. I mean, that's all I ever wanted. I mean, I can only give away what I have, and that is that people gave me love and empathy and understanding and time, and that's. Time is a very valuable entity. Oh, I'm too busy. I'm never, I don't think I'm too busy ever. I don't think I'm ever too busy to give to OA or to give to something that is meaningful to somebody else. It's just important to me to do that, to give, care and concern, because I think that's what we all need as human beings, and that's what allows me to continue to abstain, is that I know people care about me. I was in my career for 41 years, and they gave me, it was during COVID, 2021, I retired, and they gave me this big bash, like at somebody's house. It was a big front yard. I mean, it was really incredible, what they did. And what I realize is that, I always, growing up, thought I wanted to be somebody important, somebody famous, do some accomplishment, so I'd be recognized. And I was just a person among persons in this profession I did. And I worked with a lot of the people for 20 years. And, it was just, I was really appreciated. And, it really made me, feel good, and feel loved and, acknowledge that maybe, what the program had been trying to teach me all along, not that I always, but just being a human being is all I needed to do, just being a human being. And I think that not a human, I think it's so important to be a human being, and just, that I'm enough. Just my sponsor, Doris, used to say to me, you're enough. When I'd call her in a tizzy, it just meant that whether I, whether I could lift my leg, whatever I could do, it didn't matter if I was smart, dumb, whatever, that as a human being, I have a right to be on this earth and that I'm enough and nobody can tell me otherwise. And I think that was so important to me, because I think as an overeater, I just had incredibly low self-esteem. And I think I needed, unfortunately, I think I needed these two. It's taken me 43 years to really feel like I'm enough, because what happened with the appreciation from my work friends, and then I got married, and then the support I got during my cancer from everybody, I really didn't anticipate that. And I just didn't think I was worthy of it, really. And I changed a lot, I think, unfortunately, I don't know if God put this in my life to make me see that I'm enough. But I think it felt like that to me. It felt like all this happened for a reason, to really let me know that I'm loved and I'm enough. And my partner had to when I went home from the hospital, she had to do some, we had to be up, because I had to feed for 16 hours on a tube, and we had to be up in the middle of the night. And she was just like if you met her, you wouldn't think she's a caregiver, you know. But she doesn't come off as a caregiver, but she's a really good caregiver. A really good caregiver. And I know she really loves me. And we didn't fight. I don't know, God, there was never a bit of cross words said during this whole process. And you think you'd get a little, I was just so amazed. But, I made sure she got her exercise in because she needs it. And, you know, I didn't need her to sit there and stare at me, you know what I mean? Or come to the hospital. Like when I was in the hospital, I made sure she, you know, go do your thing with the guys and exercise and then come see me. You'll be happier, you know? So, and that's, you know, I think because I know how important exercise is. I've never used exercise to control my food. If I was eating, I wasn't exercising. So, it automatically it helps with the maintenance of your weight and things like that. But that's a gift from God. Is I think it got me through my life. I think it got me through menopause too, because you know I went through menopause late, but I had some depression with menopause actually, and I'd wake up in the morning thinking I can't show up to work, you know, but I'd get up, go, you know. The program taught me you just do what's in front of you. You get up, you set the alarm, you get up, you show up, and then you feel better. You know, I can't say enough about that. And also, you know, when I came in, if you just abstained that day and slept the whole day and did nothing else, that was enough. You know, that was enough. If that's all you could do, then that was enough. Is to stay abstinent. Sometimes I had days where I just couldn't get up and do anything else but abstain, you know, have breakfast, go back to bed, read a little bit, have lunch, go back to bed, you know, maybe meet some friends for coffee, have dinner and go back to bed. I mean, that's, you know, in the early days. I mean, there's no rules of how you have to live your life and abstain, as long as just abstain. And if then you'll learn how to live your life. You have the opportunity to work the steps and live your life, you know, and learn how to live. Because I had no clue on how to do a lot of things. I had some outside help, which was very helpful, but I couldn't have implemented it. You know, I didn't have the power. The steps for me gave me the power to change. It, by working the steps, the power wasn't there. That lack of power is my dilemma, you know, and that was my thing. I didn't have the power. When I came into OA, I knew it wasn't about the food. I knew there was something that guilt or what, I knew it wasn't. I had that. I didn't think if I just lost weight, my life would be okay. I knew it was deeper than that, and I'm just glad that, you know, I stayed around long enough to experience, you know, all the miracles. My life has been a series of miracles, you know. Even, you know, I had friends and, you know, one of them blabbed to my ex-husband who lives in Santa Fe, and he actually wrote me a letter. I mean, I had done amends and everything to him, and he actually wrote me a letter and to show concern, and then I reconnected with his two daughters, which was much more important than him, really, but he was sweet. He opened the door for it, and so I reconnected with my stepdaughters, who are like 43 and 46, and they're doing well, and I'm really glad. That's all that mattered to me, is that they're doing well. But let me tell you a little bit what I do every morning. Let me give you a sampling of my day, you know, because it's pretty boring, but it's kind of what I do. So I get up at 5. That's really what I get up. I roll out of bed, and that's just what we do. We go to bed early. So get out of bed at 5 and I read my books. I have two books that I read, and then I do a little meditation. Then I have my coffee, a couple minutes meditation. I'm not a big meditator. I do that more when I'm out running or cycling. That's when I'm quiet. I don't do a lot of talking when I'm out on the bike, unless it's a big group or something. And then I go out at 6, and between 6 and 6:30, and exercise between an hour and a half, 2 hours. Sometimes we latch on to a second group, it's 3 hours. And then come home and, carry on my day. Have breakfast, whatever I do. I'm not doing much sponsoring right now because I don't have the time. In terms of, to give to that I want to give, the amount of time that's required. But I'll take calls. I don't mind taking calls. I'll return calls. So that I do. And I go to meetings. I go to probably 2 meetings a week now. But I talk to somebody from the program or see somebody from the program almost every day, even if I'm out and about. As issues come up, I write about them or I don't write about them, and I reason things out with my sponsor. That's the most important thing, or a friend. Or I think now I trust people more. Like, I think if you have somebody, they don't necessarily have to be in the program for me to reason things out with them. Somebody who I've worked with for years sits next to me, and I think she probably knows me better than a lot of people. Knows my day-to-day habits, and I can talk to her about things. I won't reach out and make a call, but if we're with each other, we have lunch or something, and something's bothering me, I'll talk to her about it, and she's great. So I think we're, as human beings right now, I don't feel any different. Like, I know I'm an overeater and I need to be here because I need to have that identification. But I think there's lots of great human beings out there that don't have addictions and things like that, that are very, if you want to learn how to live, watch them live, So I do that. I observe, and I stayed with the winners, and I did a lot of things that to be successful, because I did not want this life of eating. I knew that ever since I was a kid, I knew that there was a better life out there, that I just had to figure out how to do it. But no, I didn't need to figure out how to do it. I just had to come into OA, work the steps, and then God revealed to me what that life was going to be. So, and how to live it. So, with the help of you, I believe my God, as I understand him, is in all of you. It doesn't find me parking spaces. I just believe we're all, this is my, what I've come to understand. We're all born perfect. God's within all of us. And my God gives me the power to deal with what my life gives me in front of me. And I have free will. I can do whatever I want, but God's always there. He never, like that pastor said, God never leaves me. I leave God. So I'm just grateful that Seppi asked me to lead. And if anybody has questions or whatever, I'm more than happy to answer them. Thank you. Okay, now it's time for questions. Is that what we do?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You talked a little bit about kind of reacquainting yourself with your stepdaughters.
Yes.
Can you expand about that a little bit more? Could you repeat the question, please?
She asked me if we, I reestablished a relationship with my stepdaughters, and can I expand upon it? They both live quite far away. One lives in Georgia, and one lives in York, England. And actually, I was just in England. And I didn't receive the letter till after I got back from England. But we just do email. I send them a Merry Christmas. The one has her husband has family out here, so when she comes out here, we'll do that. I know when their birthdays are. I'll send them a birthday wish. I don't think it's going to be anything. I don't have hopes of you know, I'm not going to fly to England to see him, or, you know, we're just going to have a nice, just I'll know what's going on with them. They both have two kids, and I'm interested in them, if as much as they are interested in sharing with me. They called me right away, responded right away. They were very happy about reaching out to me. So I think we had a good relationship when, you know, when they were young. I was married to with their dad when they were between 4 and 11, 4 and 12, 13. So they hadn't become teenagers yet. So, but they're amazing girls. They've done really well considering their circumstances. I'm really impressed, and I'm happy for them, and I want to let them know that I'm happy for them, you know. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Yeah.
Thank you so much. Could you talk more about how you worked steps 9 and then steps 10?
Well, I had my list from step 8.
Could you repeat the question?
She wants to know how I work step 9 and step 10. And step 9, I had my list from step 8. And I just, you know, based on, you know, what the issue was for, I'd call them, you know, or reach out to them in some way, and then make an arrangement to be with them. And then I'd say what I wanted to apologize for, and then I would, ask them, you know, like I would make my amends for, like, my ex-husband, you know, for some of the things I did. And then I said, is there anything else, you know, that I did that I'm not aware of, you know, just because it was on neutral ground, and you know, and it was, you know, and then he had a chance to respond, and it was, you know, you get a dialogue, but I don't, you know, it's really hard. My amends were fairly easy compared to a lot of people's, I think. Mine was more neglect, and my ex-husband really deserved the most amends of most of the people in my life, and my parents. I really kind of just, you know, the neediness and things like that I had from some friends, and made them feel, you know, some of that. But I really just went there with total neutrality, you know, like in a place of neutrality, that whatever was going to happen was going to happen, and I was going to be fine. You know, I wasn't worried. I didn't care about the result. I wanted to truly let them know that I was sorry. That was my job, to truly let them know I was sorry. You know, a lot of people say you make amends for yourself, but, you know, my sponsor, one of my, said, you know, you do it for them, because you've really hurt them, you know. You really hurt them, and, you know, I make amends. The byproduct is I do get some benefit, but I made my amends because I had truly hurt some people, and I had done some, you know, to my parents, and specifically my ex-husband and stuff, and even my partner, you know, I've had to make some serious amends that, you know, I do it because I'm really, really sorry that I hurt them. And if I have to be in that place that I'm really, really sorry, if I'm ambivalent, then it's not going to happen. And my step 10, I don't do something, every day do a checklist, but I do a gratitude list every morning. We have a group, thanks to my sponsor, that we have a group of about 6 women, and we send out a gratitude list, and we just say what we're grateful for. And it really, I mean, really does shift things around for me. I mean, it's the best thing to do, the best thing I've ever done, on you know, on a daily basis. But if something comes up, you know, I'll do a quick column on it, or just jot down a few things, and then I'll talk to somebody else, and then see where it goes from there. But usually things resolve pretty after 43 years, hopefully you have an idea about yourself, and I have a pretty good idea about myself at this point in time, you know, who I am, and what, you know, my patterns are pretty predictable, you know, what I do now is pretty predictable. Okay. So, okay. Oh, it's 6:20. Oh, that's it. Close class.